constrained ramp harvest control rule because it had this constraint on catch variation from year to year.
All set, Terry?
Yep, thank you.
Attorney Eitri, then Dr. Sissonwine.
Thank you. Thank you, Mackenzie. I've seen you present this a few times, and I will, you know, honestly admit I'm still digesting and processing and trying to understand, and equally trying to understand, you know, every time you do an MSC process, you kind of learn something new about it. So thank you. I think you do a really great job presenting and kind of helping understand not just what you were doing, but kind of the process you're using. So thank you for that. Just quickly, because, you know, I don't want to get lost, The work that you guys were doing didn't specifically have anything to do with kind of prioritization of management objectives. So if we're evaluating, looking at the evaluations that you did, really, as it relates to discussing next steps forward with ABC control rules, I think, is it fair to say that, you know, as a council body, we have to kind of look at what our management objectives are and our risk policy, and then look at the outputs from your analysis and see if we can't glean what some of these management strategy evaluations show us on their ability to meet the management objectives? Like, you guys didn't define management objectives or prioritize management objectives, correct?
Yes, that's correct. We didn't define or prioritize management objectives in this study. So before an optimal harvest control can be determined, that would have to be done, but that was not done in this.
Okay, great. Thank you for that.
Dr. Sissonwine, then Mr. Salerno.
Thank you. Very good presentation. Libby, I've seen it before, and I learn more every time I see it. It probably merits a longer time period than you had available, but you did an excellent job presenting so much in such a brief period of time. A couple of quick questions. One, concerning the misspecification of natural mortality. I'm trying to recall whether that's a change in natural mortality during the simulation period or it's misspecified throughout.
So the misspecification of natural mortality, the change in natural mortality in the operating model starts before the management procedure begins. So it's actually changed. It increased from 0.2 to 0.4 by 2003, I believe. And so by the time the management procedure started, the true natural mortality was at 0.4, but the stock assessment has been assuming it's been at 0.2 throughout this, from the historical all the way through the management procedure period.
Okay. I think that merits some more thought and discussion, in that retrospective patterns are known to be caused by changes in parameters like M. And therefore, how you introduce it and what period it's covered, I suspect would have some influence on what you learned about the retrospective patterns. I'm not commenting whether there's a different way or a better way to do it. I just think it's a complicating issue in it. When you go to the recruitment being a function of temperature, I assume that means that the actual operating model recruitment function changes every year because there's a different temperature. Is that correct?
So there's with recruitment impacted by temperature, it's using a Beverton-Holt stock recruitment relationship with a temperature parameter. So over time, recruitment is declining, which differs from the other scenarios where we assume it's from a cumulative distribution function with a linear decline to zero, past the threshold.
Well, that would mean that reference points are changing every year, that is BMSY and FMSY. So are there dynamic reference points being calculated in these simulations?
So the reference points are calculated, both were estimated and the true reference points are calculated with recruitment as the mean of the previous 20 years. So it doesn't account for this negative influence in temperature moving forward.
Okay. Again, I'm not sure, you know, how I would do it any different than what you've done, but I think that is also a consideration in interpreting the results, since obviously if the recruitment function is changing, it does mean the reference points that are applicable under prevailing conditions would also be changing. It's all very good work, and I'm very impressed, and I wish there was just more time to discuss the details. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mackenzie, and maybe I missed this, but you said that this approach, the work that you guys did, was based on age-structured assessments. If that is true, is there any thought of, or is there a way to apply these methods to other types of assessment processes, you know, the index-based assessments, you know, with the empirical or the AIM approach? I'm just curious to see if this would apply to some of our other more poorly doing assessments.
Yeah, so we chose to focus on the analytical assessments with age-structured assessments. We didn't focus on index-based methods, mostly because we didn't want to overlap too much with what the index-based methods group has already done. We have had some discussions, and we, you know, there is some overlap in some of the take-home messages, but we did focus right on analytical assessments. I think, you know, such a simulation framework could be used for index-based methods as well, and there is that applicability, but we didn't go in that direction in this study.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Dr. Cornain.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to chime in quickly and say that when we developed the contract, it was specific for analytic assessments. So, you know, that was by design to focus on those aspects for this work. We also knew at the same time there was work going on with the index-based methods working group. I'm also a member of that group. So there was a lot of, you know, idea sharing, but we really wanted to focus on analytical assessments for this specific contract. Thanks.
Great. We're going to go out to the audience if there's any questions. Allison Lawrence.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, and thanks, Mackenzie, for the presentation. Allison Lawrence with Conservation Law Foundation. Just like Libby, I am still digesting this every time I hear about it, so I'm sorry if this question has been asked before. But as part of your simulations, was there any consideration to analyze a control rule alternative that had a cutoff biomass threshold that would cease fishing at a predetermined metric, such as before SSB is alarmingly low or before it reaches zero where the X and Y meet? Or would the results of such a control rule be captured by any of the four control rules you have in your presentation?
So just to clarify, are you asking if there's a control rule that would reduce fishing mortality to a certain point, or reduce it to almost zero, or was there another form you had in mind?
That it would reduce it to a certain point once the SSB hit a biomass threshold at some predetermined level.
Okay. So the ramp and the P-star harvest control rules both have that decline in fishing mortality after 50% of the SSB MSY. And the way they decline is slightly different, but it is they do perform similarly in that if spawning stock biomass is low, the fishing mortality will be low. And as spawning stock biomass increases, the fishing mortality increases up to the 75% of fishing mortality reference point.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Fletcher.
He's unmuted. He should be able to talk.
You're unmuted, Mr. Fletcher.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. The floor is yours.
Okay. Both the Russians and the Norwegians, when they're figuring population dynamics, come in and use cyclical patterns like the solar cycles, the North Atlantic Oscillation, the Saurus cycles. All of what you have put on the table, if they don't match up in the cycles, is there any way that they can be correct? In other words, if there's a natural fluctuation in the fish population and we're not considering it, is there any way that what you have presented today can be correct?
So we did, thanks for your question. We did include the effect of temperature on cod and how many recruits are entering the fishery. That we found that when we fit some historical data with temperature, we found that there was a negative relationship with cod and cod recruitment and temperature. And we use projected temperature of Gulf of Maine sea surface temperature to do this relationship into the projected relationship into the future. And so there was some variation, although there was a gradual decline. So we don't have this cyclical pattern in temperature that, but we do have some relationship between temperature and population dynamics. And so that would be found in the overfished recruitment misspecification scenario and the overfished and natural mortality combination scenario where the recruitment was impacted by temperature.
Great. I see no other questions from the audience. We'll come back to the council for one last swing through. Seeing none. Thank you very much, Dr. Mazur, for your presentation. I have my notes. Is there a SSC report that accompanies this? Or
thank you. I just also want to point out that there's a executive summary, which kind of is a digestive version of the report, and that's available as well if people are interested.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right, I'll go back to Chairman Alexander.
Can you hear me, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought Jason was going to present on the SSC discussion on that, but maybe I was mistaken.
I'm here if you're ready.
Okay, go ahead, Jason.
Thank you, Dr. Chair. So I've got a presentation here. I'll try and go quickly through it. Next slide, please. So we actually met two times on this topic, a little bit different. Our tasking was a little bit different each time, but I'm reporting to you from two different meetings in this presentation. Next slide. So on the first meeting, which was back in May, we were generally looking at the presentation just like you all did. And the goal with that meeting was to provide some information, some comments to the analytical group directly with that meeting. And next slide. And then on June 8th, it was a little bit different where we were now thinking ahead to actually using the information generated from that project, along with some of the other projects that had been done in the past, you know, a couple of years that were also relevant. And so this was more looking towards now talking to the council and providing you with some advice from all of the work that you've had done on this topic. Next slide. And this is the final two discussion points that we were trying to cover. Next slide. Okay. So the first set of slides here, that will be from our May meeting, and this is when we were reviewing the work as Mackenzie just presented it to you. And so I'm going to go through the comments that we provided back to the GMRI group on that work. So the first thing we noted was that the work did not include an evaluation of a fixed exploitation rate. And so that was something that we noted. Now, what the group said back to us was, that's true, but we did do a step control rule. And since that, you know, conceptually is a rule that's kind of similar to having a fixed exploitation rate, you know, we felt, or they felt that they had that one covered. We also commented about the ramp control rule that they analyzed. And so we indicated that the breakpoint, that part where it goes from being, you know, the plateau or the top of it to where it tips down into the ramp part, that breakpoint where the ramp might start could be set at spawning stock biomass of maximum sustainable yield or some proxy of that threshold. So we sort of offered these comments, kind of getting into the details of the ramp control rule. And the discussion then kind of pivoted to, well, in the end, the classification of the optimal control rule, that would depend on the definition and prioritization of management objectives. And so you heard that in Mackenzie's presentation as well. So that came up during the SSC meeting. But the group, you know, they thought they could incorporate this type of suggestion into their evaluations, you know, perhaps not quantitatively, but in the discussion portion of their report, if not directly in the simulations. Next slide. One thing that we noted was that the error in the outcomes, they seemed pretty constrained relative to what had actually been experienced in management. So, you know, the number of outcomes seemed, you know, limited relative to some of the actual outcomes that we have actually seen in management. And so we thought there were two potential solutions to this. One would be to include some management uncertainty in the simulations, and that might add in a little bit more realism into the outcomes of the simulations. Or another way to tackle it would be to focus in on some of the, you know, the worst outcomes. So kind of subset some of the more undesirable outcomes as a more realistic subset of the simulated outcome. So we offered a couple of suggestions there. Another discussion was about the productivity regime of the Northeast ecosystem. We noted that this is changing and the characteristics of that change remain largely unknown. And so this is really important for the council to understand because it has impact on the management risks associated with implementation of the harvest control rules. And the analysts, they tried to factor in some of this stuff, but there's still a lot of unknowns with regard to the changes that we're seeing in that Northeast ecosystem. And so we just wanted to offer that comment to the council that, you know, there's still some risk out there that's not accounted for in the simulation work, but it gets you set up moving in the right direction for sure. Next slide. Density dependent growth was not considered in the harvest control rule evaluation, so we suggested that this dynamic could be included. This is something we know is an effect in the haddock population, and so if it was focused on just haddock, that would make sense, but we thought it could be included in subsequent harvest control rule analyses. And then another comment we made was showing the performance of the new control rules, the ones that the group tested, relative to the existing control rule, to kind of put that in context would be really valuable for the council. So that was a suggestion that we made. Next slide. These were more about presentation than, you know, kind of critiquing the work directly. So we thought that showing how the factors or metrics change relative to the various scenarios examined would be informative. So you could indicate which scenarios produced the lowest biomasses, the highest biomasses, that sort of thing. And you could kind of put them into a table, and then the council would have really good context for looking across the various scenarios and understanding, you know, how they change under the different harvest control rule setups. Additionally, there were a couple of different types of errors that were included in the analyses, and we thought separating them out, for instance, you know, piecing out the directional errors, or maybe you could think of those as biases versus the things that are more random in nature. That would help you, the council, better understand the effects of these errors on the simulation outcomes. So to really kind of, you know, separate those and show the council which ones are directional and which ones are just kind of random and bouncing around would give you a good way to connect that into the eventual outcomes of the simulations to understand the effects of those different types of errors in the analysis. Next slide. We focused in on how to summarize the findings, and so we felt a clear summary of the overall findings, really the highlights of the analysis, is essential to facilitate the council's synthesis of this information. And we thought they could pull in some additional help, like from the PDT folks, and it didn't necessarily have to be just the groundfish PDT. You know, some other folks might jump in and offer some help as well. But we thought getting the PDT, because the PDT, you know, they work with you all the time, and so they would have a good understanding of, you know, creating a summary that's relevant for you for the work you have to do. We also felt that creating tables of information would help convey information. It's just a good way to be able to look across and see the differences, you know, across a row with the columns being the different control rules. That kind of thing. So tabulating the information we thought would be helpful. And then examining and referencing the Atlantic Herring MSC, not using that information directly, but looking at the way the information from that management strategy evaluation, how it was presented to you, might give a couple of ideas on how to present this information. So they wouldn't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel with regard to that. So we thought they could get some good ideas on presenting the information from that Atlantic Herring MSE, which, you know, you have worked with in the past. So it would be somewhat familiar to you. Next slide. And then one more in this notion of how to summarize it. We thought showing the outcomes of the various metrics in the context of short-term, medium-term, and long-term would help the council understand the various trade-offs and how these may or may not change over time. And so this was this last bullet, we had a fourth discussion point, which had to do with discussing the relevant results for the council to consider. At this point in our meeting, we didn't feel like we had enough of the finalized information to really tackle this one. So we kind of punted that one until the finalized report comes out. So that was the May meeting, and I'll move on now to the June meeting. So next slide. So again, that follow-up meeting was to begin to think through the next steps on how to advise the council on using all of the great information that the researchers are providing to you, along with some of the other research that had occurred in the past couple of years. And so one of the first ones we started to discuss was the use of a constant allowed biological catch. So this is something that we, the SSC, have used, and the way that we use it is in the context of scientific uncertainty. And so we use this constant ABC approach where we set the ABC static for the specification period. We kind of, you know, we've been using that as a way to account for some of the unaccounted for scientific uncertainty. And so we felt that if this strategy remains as an option in the new control rules, we should think about that and make it more explicit as far as the implementation goes of that. So that's, you know, a note for the council that this is something we will want to think about in the context of the new control rules that you're looking at, you know, with the research that you've had done for you. Next slide. We also commented that due to the mixed stock nature of the plan, we thought that a framework rather than a single explicit rule might be something the council should consider, kind of along the lines of what you have now, where the existing control rule has a couple of subparts to it, depending on the circumstances we're dealing with for any individual stock. And so that might still be a good idea here, because you've got stocks that are, you know, in good shape. You've got stocks that are not in good shape, all within the same management plan, as well as different types of models that are used for the catch advice. So a framework might be a good idea to consider. We also thought a bridge rule for when a model goes from an analytical model to an index-based approach. We felt that, you know, something there is needed. You know, it can go in the other direction as well, hopefully, right? You could go from an index-based approach and maybe you get an analytical model going again. And so you just need something that kind of guides you with regard to what to do with catch advice when you're kind of switching back and forth between these different types of models, which produce very different types of catch advice. Next slide. We drilled into a ramp control rule during the meeting, in a pretty detailed way. And in fact, one of the SSC members actually electronically made a sketch for us, which I redid and is on the slide there. And so the team that was doing the work, they actually have a ramp control rule in there. But we kind of drilled into this and provided a little more detail. And so we felt a rule like this could work well for some groundfish species. And depending on the way the rule was constructed, it could incorporate some important features such as a lower biomass threshold, and that's with that the little F bycatch part there with the squiggly line. You can see how that ramp doesn't go right down to to zero on the y-axis and the x-axis there at the origin. It kind of goes up the y-axis a little bit. And the idea there would be to set like a minimum threshold that you don't drop below, and that could be a bycatch level or something like that. But the take-home point here is that the break point of the ramp, where that red arrow is, and the bycatch levels would need some significant discussion if you wanted to construct a ramp control rule, you know, as one of your options. Next slide. We felt that the research track regarding the index-based assessment methods would provide you some valuable context. So that should be in the mix while you're thinking about the work done by the folks at GMRI. So there is this whole other body of work that you can kind of look back to get additional information, because you have a lot of stocks in the groundfish complex that have index-based assessments. So this would be another source of information that you have at your disposal to help in your deliberations on this topic. And then also having information about the performance of the current control rule over time would be some more valuable context for the council. And so you could get this information simply by having the PDT create basically like a retrospective analysis of you know, what has actually happened through time, or it could be developed as part of the simulation testing directly. Now, whether there's time to do that in this current work or not, I'm not sure about that, but you know, there's different ways you could get at that, looking at the current control rule and putting that in the context of some new harvest control rule that you might like to investigate. Next slide. We also discussed the step control rules that the group looked at. There were some negative comments about that in general, but in the end, we clarified that, you know, it's not that step control rules are always bad. It clearly depends on the objectives of the management. You know, they have different types of trade-offs than some of the other control rules being examined. So you'd need to go in, you know, when examining the step control rules, you have to have those objectives in mind so that you can evaluate those trade-offs and decide whether a step control rule is something you would like to invest in or not. And then I think this is the final piece of information we wanted to pass along to you, and that is we thought developing a working group would be really valuable to help synthesize what is a large amount of work. And so this could be a group that includes you know, members of the PDT, council members, as well as SSC members. And specifically, we thought incorporating SSC members that are economists might add even more information into the mix. But the whole idea here is to have a group that is a mix of people that are going to be able to think through how best to translate between the committee and the council and the SSC, who will all be kind of looking at this and weighing in over the next however long that this takes to help you develop these new control rules. So next slide, I think that's it from the SSC. And Dr. Chair, I'm happy to take any questions that anyone might have on any of that.
Great, thanks very much, Dr. McNamee. We'll open it up to questions from council members first. Terry Alexander.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I got a couple, if you wouldn't mind indulging me for a minute. You had put up a slide that said showing the performance of the new rules compared to the old. I think that's a really good idea. I don't think we do that enough. I think we could look back. We could look back and see exactly how they would have performed since if they would have been used over the last 15 years as opposed to what we've been using. So I think that's a really good idea, Jay. And I have a question. Does it overly complicate the SSC's job when we use different control rules for all the different species, or is that just standard operating procedure for you folks? Especially when you're taking into consideration that, like with groundfish, the sector system is so complex, and we're so reliant on having enough hake to go catch flounders and enough cod to catch yellowtails, you know, stuff like that. Does that overly complicate that for you guys when you're coming up with an actual number for us?
Yeah. Thanks, Terry, and thanks for that. Having that context of what's going on now, we're in complete agreement with you. We think that's a good idea. And then to answer your question, I would say not necessarily. I think it becomes complicated and inconsistent and all of those things when it's not clear what we should be using. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have to use one thing for everything, because, you know, that's probably not going to work. And we made that suggestion saying, you know, you kind of need more of a framework rather than a single rule, you know, for everything. So it's it doesn't overcomplicate it for us to have, you know, potentially different nuances of a single control rule, or however you break it up, as long as I'll call it the rules of engagement are clear. So when we should be using control rule X or Y, as long as it's defined really well, I think, you know, it doesn't overcomplicate it for us. We'll know what to do. We'll know which part of it we should be using. And then we'll generate the catch advice based on that. So hopefully that answers your question. But I don't think it does, as long as it's set up well ahead of time to really guide the SSC into using the right part of the rule.